service commitment. And I was so broken and so afraid that I would not be able to have her be my sponsor that I would have agreed to stand on my head in the corner and spit out BBs, really. But I said that I would do it. And so in the beginning, the first service commitment that I recall was being a greeter at our group. And that was only for a few weeks, so I could handle that. You know, it wasn't like I was like signing up for a lifetime. And then the next service commitment that I had was literature person. And I think my sponsor just was of the mindset, and I feel this way too, if new people are so nervous and so scared, we got to give them a purpose, give them a job, right? And for whatever it takes, bring the body, the mind will follow. That's what I learned early on. And so I was a literature person, and I was going to be the best literature person in the whole wide world. And so I read lots of the literature so I could, if somebody came to the literature table at that point in Southern California, our meetings were an hour and a half and we had a break in them. So during the break, the literature person had to stand at the table and talk to people when they came to buy the literature. And, you know, as a typical Al-Anon, I want to be an overachiever and know, you know, things to recommend people. So that helped me learn a lot of the literature by reading it and being an overachiever. Sometimes, you know, character defects or assets gone awry, right? At any rate, I've always been of service in the program for 31 years now. I've almost always had a service commitment, and it's helped me get out of myself and learn that, you know, try to give it away, right? I mean, if I get any help from the program, and I've had a complete spiritual awakening, multiples actually during the time that I've been here, what I know is that in helping other people that have been affected by the family disease of alcoholism, that's how I gain freedom as well. And, you know, it's really been a blessing. I mean, I did probably everything in my homebrew group, every position that we had in our home group when it was time. And I learned about rotation of leadership, that just about the time you're getting good at a job that you think you're never going to be any good at, you're going to get good at it eventually. And then it's going to be time to leave it and go do something else that you don't feel you're good at. And it's helped me build confidence through the years too, you know, because what I learned was you don't have to be good at it. That was one of the first ways that I began to see unconditional love demonstrated. You can just screw it up royally. And well, the people just say, it's all right, honey, here's how we got to do that. And the next time, if you ever do that again, do it this way. You know, I mean, and it wasn't punitive, and people, you know, if they judged, I wasn't aware of it. And so it helped me gain skills and gain confidence and gain self-esteem, really is something that I didn't come here with. And I think is typical of Al-Anons. At some point I became a GR, and then I became a DR. And then at one point I was alternate delegate. I mean, I learned through the years. For me, Al-Anon has saved my life. Let me just say that. I don't think I would be here today if it hadn't been for the 12-step program of Al-Anon. And so I've always felt like as much as I could try to give back, it would never equal what I have gained. I've gained a life beyond my wildest dreams. And so it's a small offering to try to help others in that way that I have. And also sponsoring others. When I get somebody that's broken and beat down by alcoholism, it gives me so much gratitude because that's where I was. And I don't ever want to forget where I came from. It's important that I not forget where I came from in that regard. And also just be able to share the gifts of the program that I've received. You know, I learned coming up through the years that while I might not relish every service position I've ever held, that it's important for me to take my turn. Because it was made clear to me that when I showed up to the rooms broken, somebody got there that night and set the chairs up. Somebody got there that night and started the coffee. Somebody came before me to make sure there was a place for me to come to. And I want to make sure that I do my turn in doing that for others, right? Because that's how this thing continues. Just turn around to give it away, right? I remember also early on, I heard an AA speaker one time say that it was hard to fall off the wagon if you're sitting in the middle of it. And a lot of things through the years, I've done like what I call mental gymnastics. I have to, because I don't know what y'all's Al-Anon mind is like, but mine's pretty out there sometimes. So I would have to like find these little snippets similar to our slogans that I could use to help myself with when I started spinning out, which, you know, the do's and don'ts were a big part of that. Do's and don'ts in the beginning. When I first came here, I was so crazy. I couldn't even hear a lot of the literature, but the do's and don'ts, which are in the little pamphlet, Alcoholism and the Family Disease, they were snippets like do forgive, do pray, do be honest with yourself, do, you know, do go to meetings. And maybe that's not one, but don't scold and complain. Don't keep checking up on the alcoholic. There were these little, just little snippets that I could remember them when I was insane or being obsessed, when I couldn't remember, you know, the steps. That was like way too long for me to remember a whole step in the beginning. But little things like that. So the hard to fall off the wagon if you're sitting in the middle of it, to me, that meant I had to get in the middle of Al-Anon. And that's what I did in the beginning. You know, I got a home group. I became a member of that home group. And I felt like the point was made to me that home group, like home, is somewhere that you expect to be every week. And if you're not going to be there, you let somebody of your family, per se, your Al-Anon family, know that you're not going to come. And that's how I've behaved all these years. You know, my current home group, I've been in for 13 years. And when I tell them, if I'm not there and I haven't told somebody I'm not coming, y'all better send somebody to look, because I'm out in the ditch somewhere if I'm not there. You know, I mean, I will let people know. I think it's important. It gives us a sense of belonging. We are a part of, and many of us never really felt a part of in the family disease of alcoholism. The fear of making commitment. It's part of the title today. I can remember I was reflecting on this, and like my second year of program, it came up time for Thanksgiving. And I grew up in Mississippi, but I started program in Los Angeles. And the first, maybe second Thanksgiving I was there, I got invited to go to some different people's houses for gatherings for Thanksgiving. And I think that year I probably went to like five different places for Thanksgiving because I wasn't capable of standing still that long. And I was afraid. I was afraid that if people saw who I was, they wouldn't like me anymore. And that fear of making a commitment, right? Showing up, being who I am just for right now. Service has taught me that it's okay to recognize our limitations. If I've taken, there have been times when I've had a service position and things in my life have changed. The life, you know, situations that I've had have changed. And I've had to go to the group or whoever it is and say, you know what, I need to step down. I can't carry out this commitment. And I learned, my sponsor taught me, that it was more important to step down from the commitment than to stay in a commitment that I couldn't uphold and let the group down or whoever it was that the commitment was to. That was more important to be honest, and that it wouldn't be punitive, that people would much rather me tell the truth than, in essence, live a lie of like, say I'm going to do a job and then not do it. And that was good too. I mean, it helped me learn that it's all right. We don't have to be perfect and we don't have to do everything. Cause I mean, like many of us, I think when we get here suffering from the family disease of alcoholism, we're like John Wayne and bulletproof. We think we're, you know, Superman, we can do anything. And that's not always the case. I can tell you that in the service commitments that I've had at the area level have been growth producing. Let me just say that because, you know, we have to take our recovery on the road, so to speak, because we bump into a lot of other people who are in Al-Anon who are just, you know, nobody comes here because they're well. Let me just say that, right? I mean, we all got stuff and we're all trying to work our stuff out. So service work helped me really put the traditions into practice, the concepts too at the area level, but for sure the traditions a lot, because I had to learn that, you know, our common welfare comes first. I mean, it's about the greatest for the group. It's not about the individual. And that also helped me see in my personal recovery how I had been selfish in ways that were not obvious to me. You know, I mean, I think that a lot of my own recovery, I didn't have like an arrogance about me, but I would also be self-deprecating sometimes. And that is like a spiritual arrogance in reverse. You know, I mean, like to think I'm not worth anything. That's like saying that God's handiwork is not valuable, and that there's an arrogance to that, although it might not seem like it. I believe that it is. So I got growth on so many levels, and yet, you know, there have been times when I have not been as active. There was a little window around the 4-year mark for me where I just kept my pinky toe in the program, if you will, and I found that field work was great research to recognize how quickly I could become insane while even in the program, you know. And you know, I encourage people, if they think they need to go out there and do a little bit more manipulating and controlling, go for it, because only when you are certain that you're done, that's when you will surrender, you know. As long as we think we have more good ideas happening, we will keep trying to do them, and it probably will keep us from hitting a bottom. I've hit many bottoms in recovery. And that's just part of life, I think. You know, my desire is to continue to grow and deepen my spiritual connection with my higher power. For me, Al-Anon is a way of life. It is my tribe. It is where I belong. I also recognize that we have been gifted this divine map of living with the 12 steps and 12 traditions that I can forever apply and use to find my way back to God. All roads lead to home. We're taught that, you know, there are many ways of recovery. And ours isn't the only way, but it is the way that works for me. So what I've noticed through the years when people come in and you know, being a sponsor is a great way to be of service in the program. And I've noticed through many years that people will come and sometimes they go away and never come back. But what I've learned is that if I have interactions with people that leave, I need to stay loving and kind and don't make them feel bad for leaving, because if they get to a point where they want to come back, if I have been critical and judgmental, maybe they don't feel like it's okay to come back. So I learned early on to stay loving and kind and honor their path, whatever it is. We want to keep the door open, you know, and if it's somebody that needs to go away and hit another bottom and come back, we want to make sure that they know that we love them no matter what, because it's not for me to judge another person's path. Service is a great way to stay plugged into the program. You know, I had every intention of standing for delegate after I was alternate delegate, and a very good friend of mine was battling cancer. And I just kept, and I didn't even know it when it was time to do the elections, but I just kept getting in prayer and meditation that I wasn't supposed to do that. And so I did not stand for delegate. And I think some people were disappointed, but I had to follow my heart. And we're always taught to follow what we think God's will is for us here. So right after that happened, I found out my really good friend had cancer, and I wound up being her medical power of attorney and helping her get to her death. And then shortly after that, my partner and I at the time adopted her niece, for lack of a better term, great niece. I adopted an infant, and there was no way I could have done all that having a baby at, you know, 49 years old. And, you know, I say a lot of times that, you know, I can't see around corners, but God does. So I'm grateful that I listened to what messages I was getting in prayer and meditation, the nudges, and because God had a plan that I didn't know about, and it was being revealed in my life. And, you know, I've not been quite as active. So I have not been active at the area level since Ivy came to live with us 6 years ago. But I have definitely held multiple positions in my home group. And I've done just about everything. I've taken my turn, and sometimes I'll do one again. Mostly I'm just there to, you know, be a member and set up chairs, because, you know, we're taught also after we've been here for a while, it's important to let the younger members learn. And so I can help by sponsoring and being a service sponsor to people in the program. And, you know, I don't have a fear of commitment anymore at all. You know, I mean, at one point, like many of us, when we jump in with both feet and get in over our heads, and we like get overcommitted, and then we have to learn how to not be so committed and find a balance with that. Right. I mean, I think Adelon has done that a lot for me. It's helped me to seek balance in my life, because left to my own devices, I don't know much about balance. I'm a person of extremes, just like the alcoholic, except I don't drink. You know, I don't even need a drink to get crazy. So, I mean, I think that like, we're probably the sicker of the two, really, to tell you the truth. But, you know, what I know is that I can have serenity in my life, and that I can give back, and that it is a blessing, totally a blessing, to be able to give back to others that suffer from this family disease of alcoholism. And I'm grateful that I learned early on that it's important for me to do my part. I don't need to do, I just need to show up and take a turn and do my part, you know? And so until I've done every service position at least one time, there's always opportunities to do more, you know? And it just helps, you know, I've made so many, when I moved to Arizona in 2002, I didn't know anybody in Al-Anon. So I jumped in and became a GR, and that put me at service at all the assemblies. And then I became a DR, and I met so many wonderful people in the state of Arizona and Al-Anon. I had my Al-Anon family is just huge, and I couldn't ask for a better family, you know, and an opportunity to grow and continue to expand my base of friends and my personal recovery. And I'm certain that it was impressed upon me early on that service was a vital part of recovery. And giving back is as important for me to grow as it is to give to others. And I'm so thankful for that, because, you know, you bump into people out in the world, and I'm certain it's all about me with them. And I know I can be selfish and self-centered at times, but mostly I know it's been drilled in my head for so long that it's you know, I always want to look to how I can help others. So my timer for 15 minutes went off, and I just want to say thank you for asking me to come and share today. It's always good to be in a meeting of Al-Anon and to remember why I came. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much. That was great. If you have any questions for Carrie, please send them to our moderator, Mike, in a private chat. Our next speaker from the great state of Texas, and I love your background you have there, Corinne. Take it away. Please unmute and share.
Hi, I'm Corinne, and I'm a Grateful Al-Anon. This is like just my second time speaking, which just to let you know, I'm a little nervous, but here we go. Well, I'm from Houston, Texas, and I started going to Al-Anon meetings in 2010. It took me about, 6 or 8 months to find my first sponsor. And I went through four because they all disappeared. And finally, the sponsor that stuck around, and she had this criteria that, you know, I go to at least one meeting a week with her and to call her every day, to work on the steps. You know, may take a long time, but as long as you're progressing, then that's good. And then the other one was when you get to step four, you need to take on a group service position. And the two that we had was ASI, which was it ASI? Intergroup representative or something like that for our intergroup. And then there was the group representative position. It was suggested that I go to one of the intergroup meetings, and I did, and it was turmoil at this time. I don't know if anybody's ever heard having a popcorn attitude, but that's exactly what it was. It was just kind of like a train wreck going on. And I decided at that time that I was not going to do that. And so I decided to take on a group representative position. So I've had many service positions, but I want to go back to the reading. Some of the things that stood out to me were I could come later, leave early, attend meetings anytime, and skip them anytime as well. I started Al-Anon when I had a 6-month-old. And so the meetings that I've went to that were comfortable for me, that I call home group, I was able to bring my child with me. I have three now. The first one's 11, the second one's 8, and the little bitty Alatod is 21 months. So if you hear screaming in the background, it's probably the older kids torturing the little one. The other thing that stood out to me was when I discovered a job was interfering with my life, I could step away without blame. There was, and I'll go over it in a little bit, there was a group that I was a GR for that started to become toxic to my recovery, to my serenity. So I voted with my feet and I walked away. But I'll go over that a little bit more. And then the last thing was, I gained a new flexibility in my relationships with them. I was able to say yes when I meant yes, and able to say no and not feel guilty. Now, there are times like when I was asked to speak, I believe last month and the month before, I had to reschedule because my husband had a doctor's appointment that he had to reschedule like twice. And so, you know, with the kids and stuff like that, it would just be really difficult for me to monitor them and speak. So that's, you know, I really love that reading, Fear on Commitment. So some of the positions that I've held when I first came in was, you know, doing the chairs and the tables. And a funny story is, I think I was 5 years into recovery. Had the sponsor work in the steps, GR for another group at the time. I would get to the meeting super early because the school that my kids were going to were down the street, and I would drop them off, and I would have like 45 minutes to an hour to just, you know, spare. And I didn't want to go back home. So I would just go, I would set up, make the coffee and everything like that. Well, one day there was, a seasoned member, I think she is a longtime member, 25 plus years or whatnot. She She was a grumpy old lady, bless her heart, and bless her, change me. She got really upset with me and, you know, told me in so many words that I did the tables wrong. That's not how you do it. So I decided at that time, you know, I'm not going to do it anymore. I'll show up, I'll make the coffee, I'll sit and I'll meditate. And then the funny thing is that later on, it was stated in our announcements that whoever shows up first needs to do the tables and the chairs. So anyways, that was actually the group that I voted with my feet on. And I'll, like I said, I'll just talk about that a little later. I loved making the coffee because I make the best coffee. So somebody at one of the groups I went to was making coffee and I noticed she was just doing it wrong. And so what I did was I said, you have too many filters in there. And she came back and she had some time in program and she said, well, here you go, you do it. So it was kind of like reverse, you know, what happened. I'm always learning. I have defects that, you know, pop up every now and then. And then I became group secretary for one of my home groups. And what that was just finding chairs for meetings and the chair finds the lead. And then another group, I decided that I wanted to be the treasurer. So I did that. And I think I was pregnant at the time. And that was a very traumatic thing that I did for service because I had to make an amends to the group because I did take money from the pot. I paid it back. I made the amends. And, you know, I, you know, being vulnerable, sharing that. The group was amazingly caring and not understanding, but, you know, they accepted my amends. I was also a group representative for that particular group. But since our schedule changed, my husband started working later. I had to switch up my meetings. I went back to the coffee chairs and tables, and that's the easiest thing you can do. Showing up to a meeting is the easiest service one can do that I've learned. I also, you know, did another group representative at the time, and this is the one where it was affecting my serenity and my recovery because, you know, for me, a group representative means that I represent the group and I need the group's input on things when I go to district meetings, when I go to the area assemblies, and they just were like, whatever, we trust you, which is awesome. But at the same time, you know, it gave me, you know, a bad feeling that, you know, just something wasn't right. And I noticed the last meeting I went to, I was like 20 months pregnant with our last one. And, you know, some of the things that came up were not okay. And ultimately, the thing that made me walk away, vote with my feet, is they decided that they did not want any kids or any babies in the meeting because it was so distracting. Well, I, you know, pregnant, sitting there, and I'm like, I'm your group representative. How can you do this? You know, so I left there, and I didn't feel guilty for, you know, having to walk away. It was getting in, you know, in the way of my my life, and there was no way I could go because I would have a baby anyway. In between a lot of this stuff, I started doing service work online through Facebook. Me and a couple of other ladies got together and we started doing Facebook Messenger meetings. I actually started doing text meetings at the same time, and it was awesome. You know, we got to have meetings from everywhere around the world. It's like what we're doing now, but now we can see each other face to face. You know, I still monitor, I'm one of the monitors in one of the Facebook groups, and you know, there's just so many newcomers, and it's amazing to see all the service work that people give, you know, sharing their experience, strength, and hope. One of the amazing things that has come about is I got a committee together to do a fall 2020 conference, which is next week between the 25th to the 27th. And, you know, we got everything together within 1 month. And so my brain just stopped, but everything's together. You know, we got meetings scheduled, speakers scheduled, entertainment scheduled, which is movies. And it's just amazing to me how everybody wanted to come together and do some service work. You know, I do have a service sponsor, not necessarily on the books, if you will. She is actually my my old sponsor that I had that stuck around for like 6 or 7 years with me. And she actually was our district outreach coordinator. And I was kind of like the district outreach coordinator minion. And I'm very passionate about public outreach. And it came a time for her to roll over. I can't think of the phrase of it. Roll over or whatever her position is, someone else. And everyone wanted me to take that position. I wanted to so badly, but I was so pregnant that there was no way I'd be able to do it. And there's always, you know, in the future that I'd be able to do it. And it's just, I'm in awe that a lot of people were like, yeah, you can do it. You already do it anyways. I was able to say no and stand my ground with my boundaries and say, I'm sorry, I can't. If you need help, you know, I'm, you know, phone call away. One of the other things that I've heard in program is that, and this is like, I guess, something that's been around for quite some time, is when someone in program asks you to do something, you say yes. I had to learn that doesn't mean you have to say yes to every single thing, because, you know, you have a life outside of the program. So that's what, you know, practicing saying yes when I mean yes and no when I'm not available has helped me get to that that spot where I'm comfortable, and I don't feel any guilt when, you know, I absolutely can't, or something happens, like with my husband and his doctor's appointment. I had one time where I think I was supposed to meet up with my sponsor to do some step work, and my kids were having an event at school, and I told her, you know, well, my son has this thing going on, so I might be late. And she said, go do your family thing. You know, Al-Anon is not the only thing I have. I have to be of service outside of the group as well to my family. And one of the other things I learned being a group representative and going to district meetings and era assemblies is tradition 12 in action. Anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles above personalities. Holy crap, there's so many personalities in a district meeting and area assembly. I was able to really practice that popcorn attitude in the sense just watching it all unfold. And I was able to get the strength and the courage to stand up when things just kind of went totally off rails and bring it back to, you know, our purpose, what our purpose is of Al-Anon, to help families and friends of alcoholics. So with that, thank you for letting me be of service and sharing.
Thank you, Corinne. Never would have known it was your second time. I can't wait for your third. If anybody has questions for Corinne, please send them to Mike in a private message. And next, from the sunny state of Florida, Iris, please unmute and share.
Hi, my name is Iris, grateful Al-Anon member. Couple quick disclaimers. Much like Corinne, I have a kid here who might come in screaming or interrupt. So one warning there. Other thing, although I'm in the sunny state of Florida, we had our first cold few days, which I know is not cold compared to many other places, but I got sick from it and have a cough. So if I start hacking up along, you know, it's just, it's a mild cold, I promise. Where to begin? My parents met in Alcoholics Anonymous. And so I was born to two recovering alcoholics. And I'm going to put on gallery view so I'm not staring at myself. I was very fortunate. I got to grow up in recovery. Some of my very first memories are sitting on someone's lap in a meeting and hearing the Serenity Prayer. And I am very blessed and so grateful. My mom died when I was 7 from addiction. A different addiction than alcoholism, but she passed away. And so I was growing up with my dad who, got sober in, near Akron, Ohio. He has, I think, 40 something years now. You know, he's like one of those old timers and, you know, he grew up, in recovery with some of
the frozen iris.
Yes. Hopefully she'll be right back.
Good. It wasn't my internet going out this time. All right.
Things have been going too good.
I stopped her video to see if that would start it back up, but it doesn't look like it. Oh, hopefully she will join us back in.
I just sent her a text to let her know she's frozen. Okay, she's still talking and doesn't even realize it. I've done that before.
Just sent her a message, her internet went out.
Uh-oh. Well, nobody. Then I'd say call it a wrap if she doesn't go into the Q&A session.
Good time to go to the literature table.
Okay, now somebody better volunteer to speak for 2 minutes about their service. At some point, send me a chat and I will.
Hi, I'm Carmen, and I'm... can I speak for 2 minutes? I really, I really appreciate this about service. I came to Al-Anon maybe about 27, 28 years ago. And I remember vividly how service helped me. I was in a world, my home, dealing with alcoholism, my codependence, a bunch of kids. And I had no self-esteem, and I didn't think I was able to do anything. And I was doing so much, I just didn't realize, raising my kids and all. But the first thing I did was making coffee, and there were criticisms. Yes, there was bumps in the middle of this road. But later on, because I had 3 children, I couldn't commit, but I did alternate. I was an alternate for everything, for group representative, for area representative. So I could work, even though I couldn't commit to everything. I was like a PRN person. And that was very helpful to me, really. That's when I started thinking that, yeah, I can do something. I'm somebody. I'm not stupid. I can really think and still do service. And I was very well received anywhere that I go, anywhere I went. I lived in New York, Maryland, and now I'm in Tucson, and I'm always very well received, and I feel that I belong. Al-Anon has given me a life and a way of life, which I didn't know I could have. Thank you.
Thank you so much for stepping in.
Yes.
Welcome back, Iris. Did Violet come unhook your internet?
Good. third disclaimer that my higher power and my internet like to play games with me. I think it was just a pause of, okay, slow down, gather my thoughts. Right. So where I left off, or where I think you last heard, was, you know, I grew up with my dad, who was an old timer in recovery, both AA and Al-Anon. He started sending me to Alateen. And he made it very clear, like, this is the deal. You know, if you, after my six meetings, I decided I wanted to keep going. I was 8 or 9. And he said, here's the deal. If you're going to be part of this, you know, you need to get a sponsor, work the steps, and, you know, be committed. You have to do something for your meeting. And I was 9 years old. So, you know, and that's what I did. I got a sponsor. I went through the steps. We did it, you know, after the meeting each week, you know, a step a week, out of the AA big book, because that's how my sponsor had learned it. You know, I didn't understand any of it. I was 9 years old, but I did the work. Things got better. Something happened. And I slowly became more and more of service in Alateen. And over my course of 11 years in my Alateen work, I got to be involved in a lot of different things. I got to be secretary, group rep. You know, I've chaired conventions. You know, I got to be really involved in a lot of amazing ways. And as a teenager, that was a great way for my self-esteem. I learned so much. You know, I think one of the fun things that we did was, you know, Alateen did not get as much support as I think it should. And I see that all over. I mean, not just my area. And I was in Akron, Ohio at this point. So the way that we try to get the districts involved, aside from, you know, holding events and rallies, or, you know, like we did car washes and, you know, baked goodies, or we essentially what our sponsor did was they'd take the Alateen groups and kind of slave us out for the events. You know, my service was, you know, as Alateens, we're going to be cleaning up, we're going to serve the food, you know, we're going to show up at district every so often and, you know, ask for help with money, because we're teenagers. We aren't self-supporting. You know, we did talent shows. I mean, all sorts of really fun, exciting things. And I mean, at the time I really didn't appreciate it. Really cool story. So a few months ago, I got to see Mary Pearl speaking on Zoom. And I don't know how many of you know who she is, but she is, like, you know, the Al-Anon speaker of all speakers. I didn't know she was alive until a few months ago when I got to see her. But she came to Akron, Ohio, I think, you know, this was like many, many years ago. I must have been 14. And she was doing this big event, this weekend event, doing the family traditions or something. And as Alateens, our job was to hand out the tickets, clean up after everyone, serve the food. I mean, we were to the point where we were like, we should just get uniforms and collars and call it a day. And I was so resentful about being forced to do these things, because, you know, I'm an angry teenager. I just wanted to go out and hang out with my friends, that I missed half of Mary Pearl's talk. And I when I finally realized what a great opportunity that was and how amazing she was, you know, I totally regretted it. And then I got to see her a few months ago on Zoom, alive still, and just as amazing. Anyway, so, you know, to me, service was just kind of expected, as along with getting a sponsor and working the steps. It was just what we do. This is what we do here. Several years later, you know, I aged out of Alateen. They essentially said, look, you're too old. You can't keep coming here. It's time to go to Al-Anon. My experience with that has been that many Alateens do not graduate into Al-Anon for a billion different reasons I could get into, but there's often a discomfort. Al-Anon tends to be a lot older than most, you know, than a 19-year-old moving from Alateen to Al-Anon. A lot of my friends said it's like sitting in a room with a, you know, like 20 copies of their mothers. You know, so there's a generational gap, and there is, and there's definitely a perception gap and attitude. So it was really hard to make that transition. And at 19, my transition was I found a boyfriend who wasn't an alcoholic, and he became my parental replacement, essentially. And you can bet how well that went. I decided I didn't need this program anymore. Everything would be fine. And I came back into the rooms about 3 years later, pregnant, suicidal, just off the psych ward, needing help. So I came back into these rooms. And I moved to Florida at that time to be near my dad, who, the first thing he did was drag my butt to a meeting. He's like, this is the only solution I got to give you other than taking you to appointments and so on. And again, the expectation was get a sponsor, work the steps, be of service. There was, there was no discussion. It was just, that's what we do here. And I was dealing with, mental health issues. I was pregnant. I was absolutely insane. So my first service commitment was just showing up with my butt in the chair and cleaning out the coffee pot. I was too anxious to talk to anyone. I was too sick to, I couldn't even pick up the phone. The phone would ring and I'd chuck it across the room. I was so distraught and disturbed. But I showed up every week, that was sometimes the only place I was going because I was dealing with agoraphobia. And I'd clean the coffee pot and that was all I could do. And then eventually I began sponsoring again. And then I discovered the wonderful world of online, because I was dealing with these things. I could not leave the house. I don't drive. I will share that one of the miracles in program is I've gotten behind the wheel a few times now and I'm learning how to drive. That's huge for me. That is such a success. But anyways, because of those things, I was stuck isolated inside with a newborn baby. I began sponsoring people online and I didn't think that was possible. I didn't think you could help people online. I thought I had to be face to face with someone, able to see them. But I knew if I didn't work steps with someone else, I was going to die. Like for me, this is a life or death situation. So I started working steps with people online. One of my, she's still my sponsee today. We worked the steps through text in the middle of the night, like 3 a.m. I was breastfeeding my infant. She was breastfeeding hers. And that was how we did it. And we formed this relationship. And eventually that turned into this online community. Corinne's one of these women. And we started, we started meetings through Facebook Messenger. This was about 6 years ago. It was absolutely amazing to see how it grew. And part of being service online, just part of being service in general was really learning what are my strengths, what are my assets, what am I good at? I am not good at organizing. I am frazzled. I do not like organizing. I even messaged Corinne this morning, like, can you send me the reading? Because I didn't read it. I'm just, I fly by the seat of my pants. That's what I'm good at. I'm good at speaking. I know I'm good at rallying people. I'm good at saying, let's get together. Let's do this stuff. I'm great at delegating. But you want me to organize anything or plan something, it's not happening. And I learned that through doing a bunch of different service things, through being a secretary for a group, through being a secretary for a convention, for planning, being part of the convention for next week, the fall conference, I knew my role. I was like, this is not stuff I'm good at, but I know what I am good at and I can find a speaker. That built so much self-esteem and trying different service positions and doing different things. I now know who I am. I didn't know who I was without another human being. I did not know my personality, my likes or dislikes, my strengths, without, I was essentially a parasitic relationship. I latch on to someone and want them to take care of me. I know where I am now. I know how I can stand on my own two feet. Another piece of it, I love the question about, was there ever a service position I didn't want to do or along those lines? And let me tell you, every service I have been asked to do, I did not want to do it. I know a lot of Al-Anons who are go-getters. They're like, yep, I'm ready to step in, take charge, do all the things. I'm super, they talk about lots of control in Al-Anon. And for me, I am a nope, I don't want to do it. I'm going to isolate. I'm going to go to sleep. perfectionism being one of those issues. We have a great reading that talks about perfectionism leads to procrastination and paralysis. And for me, if I can't do it right, if I don't think I'm going to do it right, then forget it. I'm not going to do it at all. So I was very fortunate to be told that, you know, this is what we do here. You get a sponsor, you work the steps, you do service. And having worked the steps, I'm now a little bit more functional and recovered and sane. Now I have to do service. So whenever, thank you for the time up. So when it came to service, hold on, baby. I learned to just say yes. Just do it and see what happens. And you don't have to do it perfectly. And believe me, I have not done it perfectly. The last really big service commitment I was part of, I was kicked off of. For, you know, some pretty big mistakes that I'll own up to. But at the same time, I learned from that. Every experience is a growing experience. One last thing I'll say is I think Alateen is one of the most important pieces of our whole Al-Anon community. I mean, that's the next generation. I want Alateen to be there for my kid, you know, when she's old enough. I really want it to be there for her because she needs to recover from my crazy. You know, I really want it to be there for my grandchildren. I've wanted to become an Amias for a long time. Unfortunately, there's been roadblocks, you know, every time, you know, things come up. But I think that's really where, we need more service in Al-Anon specifically. And, also if I'm not doing well in my recovery, I'm not going to be a great, you know, I'm not going to be of service to anyone. I'm not going to be available. So number one was having that sponsor and working the steps so that I can be available to my daughter or to my home group or to, you know, the Alateen program one day. So I think that's it for time for me. Thank you so much for asking me to speak. Grateful to be here. And I'm going to run and take care of the kid for a few minutes and be back.
Thank you. Stay for 1 second because I want to tell you personally, thank you to you and Corinne. You guys saved my life many years ago when you got that Facebook group growing, and you've saved many lives. So thank you. If you have any questions for Iris, please send them to Mike. Any questions of or any of our speakers at this point, you can still send them in a private message to Mike. Let's give one big jazz hand salute, and I will turn it over to Mike to use the rest of the time to get your questions answered.
Great, thanks everybody. Yes, those were really great speakers. So glad that everyone could make it here and hear those today. And so I do have a few questions that have already come in. And so I'll let them know if the question is for a specific individual speaker or if I'll have all three of you respond. And if you could please keep your responses to about 2 minutes so we can get as many in as possible. And I do have a timer. So let's start with Carrie. And let me get to the exact wording of that question, Carrie. Here we go. So do you, when you are preparing yourself for speaking, Carrie, do you have an aha moment for your recovery as you reflect before a speaking commitment or while speaking? And if you can think of an instance, a specific instance, would you mind sharing that with us? Go ahead, Carrie, and unmute yourself.
Do I have an aha moment before speaking? Well, I shared about the little mental gymnastics that I've learned to do. So years ago, my heart's pounding really fast. So this must be what I'm supposed to say. I remember when I was just a couple years in, I was listening to a speaker in a meeting one time, and I heard someone was sharing their story. And I'm sitting in the back, which is unusual because usually I'm one of those first two rows kind of people. And all of a sudden I hear this voice go, "You could do that, like speak." I'm like, "Oh no, I couldn't do that." And it kept going. And so I have been able to speak a lot in my time in recovery. But early on, I was get so nervous that I had to figure out some way to help me get past that. So here's a little mental gymnastic that I came up with. This is the best aha I could give you. I always figured that before I speak, I ask God to give me the words because God knows what I need to say. And so I figure if I turn it over to God and I screw up, it's God's fault. So it's got to be okay then, right? So that's how I get through it. The only other thing that I would say that helps me a lot also, once I get up to the podium, of course, we don't have that here, but especially if there's a lot of people there, this helps so much, is to ask, you know, say, thanks for having me come and welcome everyone and ask who's new and can I see their hands? Because the moment I see the new people, I recognize that those people are probably scared to death. They don't know what's going on. And that gives me like a face to focus on, to shine God's love out there, because I know those people are scared. So those are the things that I use. That's not really like an aha moment, but the knowing that if I screw up, it's God's fault, that's helped me a really great deal.
I'm glad to hear God can take it. Thank you very much, Carrie. Let's see, Corinne, we have a question for you. If you'd go ahead and unmute. What is a popcorn attitude?
Okay, so popcorn attitude is when you're watching a movie, you eat popcorn, and you're eating popcorn, that means you can't talk. So for like Thanksgiving coming up, I bring my my popcorn and my attitude, and I let the crap unfold in front of me. The family that we're going to is they like to talk about, you know, outside issues and stuff, especially this particular year. It's, you know, I'm bringing two bags of popcorn, and I'm just going to watch it unfold. You know, and I have my boundaries, and, you know, we have our kids, and we don't talk about certain things in certain ways. So my boundary, my plan is to scoop the kids up and go walk to the lake. You know, so I can sit there for a little bit eating my popcorn, but once it's out, which means I need to open my mouth, I'm going to grab those kids and go to the lake. So I hope that explains it. Popcorn attitude, just, you know, mom, masking tape over mouth. So.
Great. Thank you very much, Corinne. This is, oh, good, Iris, you're back with us, because the next question is for you. And boy, this is, to me, a really important question, because you brought this up, and I've seen this in our Al-Anon and Alateen groups here in Arizona. What is it that we can do so that Alateens feel more welcoming when they transition over to Al-Anon? Big question, I know, but take it away.
Thank you. It's an amazing question, and I'm so glad that. So I'll share some of my biggest difficulties in transitioning into the Al-Anon world was because I'm younger than most members. I'm starting to age up, I promise. But you know, I tend to get this. I'd be treated like a newcomer over and over and over again. Like I didn't know what I was talking about. I'd get people who were surprised that I was sponsoring. You know, I'd even offer to sponsor people and they'd say, well, you're just too young. You don't have the experience that I need. And it's like, I just want to work steps with you. I've been working steps since I was 9. I got some experience. You know, so I think that recognizing that, you know, just because we're younger doesn't mean we're newcomers. And really just, you know, just the loving, open-hearted attitude. Another piece of it too, I think is, and Corinne touched on this, where, you know, she was part of a meeting that no longer wanted children around. And that, to me, it's heartbreaking. I mean, it's a, you know, we're Al-Anon family groups. It's not just for the adults, you know, it's for the family. And if, you know, if I couldn't bring my daughter to meetings, I wouldn't have been able to go. Especially when I was coming back. And I did have meetings that asked me not to come back because of, you know, I was breastfeeding my daughter in the meetings, and they were, you know, they didn't want that distraction. So making sure that the parents are welcome, the children are welcome. For me, knowing that this was a community that I could come to no matter what. I mean, I was raised in it, so that's what I was taught. Like, I knew, like, any issue I had, there's a 12-step program I could go to and would be welcome no matter what. But it hasn't always felt welcoming just because, you know, you got a young person in here and it doesn't feel like, you know, I belong. So I think the other part is making sure that Alateen groups are available in your area. And if they are available, getting them involved. There is a Monday night meeting here. There's an AA meeting, an Al-Anon meeting, and an Alateen meeting at the same time. They all use separate doors to enter the building. The Al-Anons do not interact with the AAs. The Alateens don't interact with anyone. They're kind of kept separate, and the parents, you know, just grab them and leave. And to me, that's not community. I think, too, AAs and Al-Anons ought to interact a bit more. You know, I was so grateful when I got to speak at an AA group. I'm grateful when AAs are invited to speak at Al-Anon conventions. I mean, there is, you know, an importance in autonomy. And also having Alateens get involved, inviting them to speak, inviting them to attend the meeting. Just because they're a teenager, you know, doesn't mean they can't understand the concept of what we're talking about in our Al-Anon rooms. And, you know, when there is events and conventions, making it priority that Alateens have their meetings, their own rooms, and that they're invited to the Al-Anon events as well. So I think that's the best suggestions I got. So thank you.
Thank you very much, Iris. This next question is for all three of you. And we'll start with Carrie, and then go to Corinne, and then Iris. How have you used your service sponsor, and in what ways has it been helpful? So, Carrie, let's start with you.
Well, I used my sponsor when I was at service at the area level from GR up through alternate delegate. My sponsor at the time, was a past delegate who was still involved very much in Arizona service work at the assembly level. And so I would talk to her about things I didn't know about or issues that I needed to traverse because they happen, you know, I mean, we're personalities where people show up together. So mostly it was about learning how things worked at the assembly level, at the area level, because I didn't always know the etiquette of the decorum really. And there is one. And so, you know, I'm a good little Southern girl and a good little Al-Anon. I don't want to make anybody mad at me or piss anybody off until I do. And, you know, then I got to make sure I'm doing the right things because I need to be tactful. You know, I think it's important for me to be turned back to the traditions and, you know, look at the solution through the steps and the traditions. And it's always good for me to get perspective on stuff because when I get irritated, I kind of lose that stuff. And, you know, I mean, I'm here for a reason too. So I like to make sure I run things by someone else, but it's always good to hear myself saying it to my sponsor, listen to the direction that I'm given and get some perspective, and praying about it is always, always a good solution, sleeping on things and praying about it. So my sponsor tended to turn me back to those solutions. Thank you.
Thanks, Carrie. Corinne?
Well, I've had three service sponsors. I'm like the revolving door for sponsors. I've had seven, you know, step sponsors or whatever, and three service sponsors. The first service sponsor I had went to her and I asked her a question. She said, go to our service manual. I'm like, okay. She says, you need to read the whole thing and memorize everything. And I'm like, This one was the one we had, and it's thicker than the one, you know, we have now. So she disappeared. I have issues with abandonment, if y'all can't tell. And the second service sponsor I had was our area delegate. She never, ever responded to me. She lived in a different city. And my third service sponsor happens to be our area public outreach coordinator for here in Houston, or Area 53. And I go to her now. And, you know, we together go to the service manual and we look for the answers to whatever questions. And like I said, when I was sharing, Tradition 12, you know, helps me figure out, you know, what is the principle in this situation? What, you know, what tradition would fit this situation. And we find the solutions in the service manual and we discuss it. And if there's anything that needs to be done, we figure out what, you know, I can do or what we can do to, you know, to work through that.
Thank you, Corinne. Iris?
So for myself, I never found that having a service sponsor was necessary. Growing up in Alateen, you know, that we're essentially assigned sponsors. You know, the Al-Anon person who runs the meeting, they essentially are there to sponsor us, work steps, or we sponsor each other in Alateen as well. But they were the ones that really taught us service. In my situation now, most of my service work has been online, and I don't know a lot of people in person who had that experience up until recently with Zoom becoming this huge boom. So I haven't really done much above the group level at my face-to-face groups, you know, over the last few years. I mean, I don't drive, so all of my service has been online. And what I've found is having a, you know, there's certain things I know when transitioning above the group level in person, we tend to know who was in that position before us and they get to, you know, share what they did and how to help. And we can go to them for questions. In the online world, you know, for example, I'm moderator to one of the Facebook groups with Corinne and several other ladies. We work together. You know, if we have a question we're unsure about, you know, we message each other and discuss, okay, you know, what traditions can we bring in? And, you know, it's a mini meeting of, you know, what's appropriate here. And what I found to be the most important thing in Al-Anon is really that community. I think that's my theme right now. Even when I'm struggling with a step or something, I don't always go straight to my sponsor anymore. I now have this huge community of people with a variety of experiences that I can reach out to and say, hey, do you have experience with this? Can you give me some, you know, can you share some with me in this situation? And that includes with service. Like if I know someone who's had experience doing this aspect of service, I go to them. I don't necessarily need, I have not found it necessary to have a service sponsor as of yet. Maybe I'll get a position in the future where I need one. But for me, it's that community of, you know, there's so many different people I can reach out to. So thank you.
Well, thanks all three of you. Some nice variety in how you've used service sponsors or use someone to help you with service. I'm going to ask Gene T to unmute for a minute, and he's going to share for 2 minutes on service and recovery in his program. Gene, go ahead.
Hi there, I'm Gene. I was reflecting on the topic this month, fear of making the commitment. And I heard a lot of things, a lot of good things today on overcoming that. I remember before Al-Anon, when I made a commitment, I had to be the superhero, which means I had to be the superhero. I did it alone and I did it the best, or I wanted to do it the best. I had to do it the best. I wanted everybody to see that I did it the best. And then I got to Al-Anon. And early on in Al-Anon, I got trapped in the hallway of a convention. And they said, you want to be a service? I said, well, as long as I don't have to lift anything. I recently had back surgery. So I found out they wanted me to be treasurer. And I says, you got to be kidding me. And this person says, I know you know money. You deal with money and contracts all the time. You can do this. I says, I can't do this. That was an experience that taught me a lot about what fear of making a commitment, how do I overcome that? And that is through service. And what I realized and that I learned was I never have to do it alone. I had a fear of doing Excel spreadsheets. Well, no, I did not learn how to do them. I found somebody to help me do them. I had a lot of other fears, but I was encouraged to reach out. So what service has taught me that almost everything that I'm doing, somebody's already done. So I can reach out for help. And that has helped me get over that fear of making a commitment. Thanks.
Thanks, Gene. Boy, who's your Excel spreadsheet person? No, just kidding. So here is a question for Iris and Corinne. You both mentioned Facebook meetings. And so a question came up is, how do Facebook meetings differ from regular Al-Anon meetings? So Corinne, we'll start with you. And then Iris, if you want to chime in after, that'd be great.
I really don't think that there's any difference other than you're not in person. I know when we first started, like with the text meetings, it was, you know, I would open it up pretty much for, I don't know, 12 or 16 hours so people can share their experience in the vent page within the Al-Anon group. And, you know, I had to do a workaround through the crosstalk. So that's something we ran into was, you know, crosstalk within these meetings. For the text meeting, I was able to go in and turn off commenting to eliminate crosstalk when someone would share their experience, strength, and hope. When we did messenger meetings, audio only, because the video would, you know, eat up bandwidth or whatever, you know, you still had that chat box open. And so, you know, there would be some crosstalk here and there. You know, and you can't really do anything about that. You can ask people not to do it. I mean, it's the same with the Zoom. We have the chat box here or whatnot, and people sometimes forget to mute themselves, and you can, you know, have the distractions that way. But, you know, I really think for the majority of, you know, the differences, there's really none. It's just that we can't hug each other. We can't hold each other's hands. You know, we're just not face to face. And, you know, I guess maybe because I'm, you know, I am younger, and I'm in a very techie family that I actually prefer doing these right now, even though my face-to-face group is meeting in person. There's just no difference. I don't think there's a difference other than the physicality of it.
Iris, do you want to add anything?
Yeah, Iris here. See, I think some of the differences I can point out, you know, there really isn't much difference. The meetings are run the same. I think the only struggle we ran into was figuring out service structure and, you know, how do we get meetings to communicate with other meetings? And, you know, there was a lot of conflict there I won't get into. But, you know, there's still meetings. The first Facebook Messenger meeting we started is still going on today. It's Tuesday mornings at 11. We do the 11th step every week. We have had to switch platforms to free conference calls though. And then with COVID, now we have Zoom. excuse me. So the other thing I say is different is that I'm going to go back to the community, that widening community. You know, I have sponsees, I have meetings where I get to attend with people from all over the world, India, UK, Australia. I mean, it's absolutely incredible. And that blending of cultures, and even Al-Anon is different in different parts of the country and different parts of the world. It's really cool to, you know, come together in that way. The other thing I'd say is different is technology gives us this really amazing ability to connect instantly. Corinne actually coined the term of pop-up meetings, where we can post anywhere, you know, we're about to have a meeting, and get 25 to 50 people jump on within an hour and be ready for a meeting. And it's incredible. So having that access, and especially when I was really struggling in the beginning of coming back into my recovery, you know, I was able to attend a meeting almost every day, sometimes several times a day, you know, when I had nothing else to do but sit in my misery and I couldn't make it through the next few minutes. So that's really incredible. I think technology is a gift. You know, as crazy as this whole pandemic has been, I think in a lot of ways it's going to really improve, you know, the world of recovery. Actually talking to someone in the chat privately, they asked about, you know, this younger generation and how we can get them more involved. And the truth is, because of the online world, I'm seeing a younger generation get more involved. You know, I'm now seeing people my age, I'm getting up there, you know, getting more and more involved. And I really think that, you know, we're going to see an influx in our face-to-face meetings when they start meeting again. And that's something to keep in mind and be prepared for. You know, we're going to see some younger people, and they aren't necessarily going to be brand new. So thank you.
Thank you, Iris. Carrie, I have a question for you. So could you just talk a little bit about the spiritual principles that you've been able to employ both in your recovery through working service and participation in Al-Anon?
Sure. I think the biggest one would be the same spiritual principles that I've gathered just through working the steps or continue to try to cultivate. That's humility. I think throughout the steps, over and over and over again, we're brought back to there's a power bigger than us, whatever we call it, and we're not it. And in the traditions, you know, the group conscience is something bigger than us. And in that recognition that I choose to call my higher power God, that God is the infinite ultimate power and emanates through us as us and is present with us at group level, wherever two or more are gathered. I also am very passionate, especially about Al-Anon, anything related to Al-Anon. So, and can be quite dominant if you might not notice just from this little sharing today, but I have as most of us in Al-Anon can be quite dominant and domineering. So I've learned to keep my mouth shut sometimes, and I've had to learn when to open my mouth. And I would have to say that humility is probably the biggest spiritual principle, and recognizing that I don't know what God's will is for another person, and I don't know what another person's path is, because I'm pretty much of a little know-it-all left to my own devices without, you know, deference to my higher power. And really, I don't know what anybody's path is, you know, and my sponsor helps bring me that back to that all the time, that God has a plan. It's perfect. His timing is impeccable, and I don't get to see around corners. And so recognizing that I'm just a small part of a very big thing, that's another one. It's like, I am important in this whole collage of Al-Anon, but I'm just one piece. And it takes all of us to make the whole, not one. And I'd be remiss if I didn't share here the thing that my sponsor harps about more than anything, which is that anonymity is a spiritual foundation, and that is, no one has a better chance of getting this than anyone else. We're all equal. Everybody has just as much opportunity to do it as or gain the freedom, spiritual freedom, as I do. We just have to be willing to do the work. We have to be willing to seek that higher power to foster that connection, turn our will and our lives over it, and to just let it direct us and guide us through our day. So I hope that answered your question a little bit. Sorry, I get a little wordy sometimes.
No problem. Thank you very much, Carrie. I've asked Thomas from Tucson to speak for a couple of minutes on how service and participation has been part of his recovery. So Thomas, you've got 2 minutes.
Hi, everybody. I'm Thomas, and I'm a grateful Al-Anonian. I like to use that phrase. And you know, when I got into this Al-Anon thing, the first time it didn't work. So I stepped away for 15 or 20 years because everybody in these rooms were just a bunch of old people sitting around talking. Now I'm one of them. Positions of leadership. All my life, from the time I was a young man, I was leading. I was the captain on, you know, in grade school, on the baseball team, at recess. I mean, I just grew up that way. My dad was a business owner, small town in the Midwest, and he became the mayor, and he was a church this and that. I think I was in junior high school. I gave a sermon from the pulpit in the church. I mean, it was just somebody's got to do it. And so I just learned that I was always going to be a leader. Then I went to my first Al-Anon meeting and I heard that there are no musts in Al-Anon. There are no musts in Al-Anon. I'd never heard anything like that before. And I thought, there's a group of people here and they're saying there's nothing you gotta do. So I came to the second meeting because I thought, all right, I could do this if I really can take a break and not have to run the damn thing, but I'll probably be running it anyway in a couple of weeks. So I went back to the next meeting and I wasn't running it and I wasn't allowed and it just kept going. Over the years, is that 2 minutes? Well, let me just say that I heard the term setting up chairs, and that reminded me how I started service. And then I heard that in Al-Anon, there isn't osmosis, it's asmosis. You get your ass in enough chairs and you'll get something. Always say yes when asked. I found myself at an AA Thanksgiving meeting being a speaker, and I worked on that for weeks. And I got up there and I froze and I just threw the notes away and just told my story and it worked out great. And I got to the back of the room after the meeting and a young man came up to me, an AA member, and he said, he had tears in his eyes. And he said, I've never heard anybody from Al-Anon speak. Thank you so much. Blew me away. Now, I was asked to sit on the steering committee here in Arizona. And I thought, no. Now I got to be the leader. Now I got to run the whole damn thing. But I get to go there and sit and say nothing and absorb. And I've had a couple of opportunities to open my mouth and say something. And I think maybe I can be helpful that way. And I've learned, I heard, wait, why am I talking? I just yesterday heard for the first time, waste. Why am I still talking? So I'll stop now. Thank you so much for being here. That's amazing to see and be able to sit with this group of people. Thank you.
Thank you, Thomas. One last quick question for each of our speakers before we have to turn it back over to Kay. And if you don't have time to play a big role or participate in service right now because of so many things in your life, what's one thing that each of you would say you could do in terms of service and participation in your program? And we'll start with Carrie and we'll go to Corinne and then we'll go to Ira. So one thing that you could do if you can't participate in a big way.
Just one, sponsorship or just be consistent at my home group. I'm sorry, I can't just choose one.
Corinne?
I would say just going to meetings, showing up, show up, suit up, shut up.
Hey, Iris?
Oh boy. So, there's a reading in one of our pieces of literature that talks about, it says something, if I don't have 10 minutes for meditation, then I need to meditate for an hour. And so if I don't think I have time for service work, you know, I need to do service work. And service doesn't have to be big. I don't have to take the GR position every time it's available. If I'm just cleaning up the coffee pot, that's service. And at the base of it, the number one thing I can do for my recovery is sponsoring others. If I'm not sponsoring others, I'm lost. You know, I'm not going to get anything else out of it. So if you're not sponsoring, that's what you need to do.
Well, once again, I want to thank the three of you. I want to thank everyone who sent in some questions. I'm sorry we didn't get to all of them and some great insightful answers. And let's give the speakers another nice round of applause. Thank you so much. And I'm going to turn it back over to Kay, our chairperson.